Our Friday panel this morning, I'd like to welcome both to the studio. With us, our independent TD, Marion Harkin, and former general election candidate and president of Sligo Chamber of Commerce and Industry, Jim Lawler. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
And I know you have a busy day in particular this morning, busy weekend, Marion Harkin. But
yes,
I want
heading
to.
Heading for Ballyshannon after this. Shout out to everyone down there. I hope to be with them from lunchtime on.
I want to start with the public transport issue, because I know you spoke, and I was picking up on your Dáil speech yesterday, proposal from the independent group of TDs. You're not a member of that group, actually.
I am, of course.
Who are you?
God bless us, Niall.
I didn't think you were part of the Thomas Pringle group. Oh, you are. Okay,
my mistake, my apologies. Michael Fitzmaurice, Michael McNamara, Catherine Connolly, Thomas Pringle and Joan Collins.
All right, okay, so you are appointed. So why would you support free public transport, accessible transport? And
well,
is it something the country can afford?
The first thing I would say, Niall, is that the government didn't oppose it. So, as such, everyone in the government...
Listen to what... It was Niall Collins responded, wasn't it?
It was, and also there was a Green minister responding.
Oh, yeah, I didn't get that one. I couldn't make head nor tail of what Niall Collins was saying, to be honest. I couldn't get from what he was saying as to whether they were supporting it or opposing. But in any case...
Well, they didn't oppose it, so shall we put it that way? Because free public transport is available in some countries and in certain parts of some European countries. And, I mean, it was Thomas Pringle's motion. And it's not just free, he talked about accessible. And that's a hugely important issue, Niall, for people who have any kind of a disability. And one of the points I made when I was speaking is that sometimes when we think of people with a disability, we think of them and us, those of us who don't have a disability and those who do, when we think of people in wheelchairs. But the truth is that as we're living longer, thankfully, most people will acquire some level of disability, whether it's a diminution in your sight or your mobility or whatever. And the idea is that a public transport should not be just for able people. It should be universal design so that it can be used by anyone who has a disability as well. But that was part of what the motion is about. But I suppose we're talking about moving to net carbon zero. And one of the ways that we can do that is that we use public transport more. Now, I know that to so many people listening here, they'll be screaming at the radio.
Yeah,
the
they were during the week.
Coming in saying the buses we have, the public transport we have, doesn't turn up. The schedules are not fulfilled.
Correct.
And obviously, that's a crucial part. But the idea that public transport would be free, not today or tomorrow, but that we get there step by step, and that it would be accessible, is in itself a very good policy.
All right, but just on that, would it not be better? I mean, it's going to cost in the region of, what, 600 million euro, I think Deputy Pringle said.
Yes.
But would we not be better off putting that money towards improving the services we have instead of providing free transport?
Look,
as you said, we have a situation where buses aren't even turning up at the moment in some routes.
There is always an argument when you have a finite pot of money as to how you spend it. But I think the principle of free and accessible public transport is, it's a really important one, because what it's saying to people is this, that we are putting in place a service of public transport which you and your family and your community can use to get to work, to do the essentials. Mm. I mean, there's this idea that if you live in rural Ireland, you're wedded to your car. And you are, because in many cases, though not all things are improving, you have no choice. But in most places, that's still the case. But Niall, people in rural areas, if they had access to free, reasonably frequent and accessible public transport, I'm telling you, those buses and whatever train services there were would be absolutely full. So I think as a vision for where we want to go as a country, I think it's a very positive one.
Jim, do you see it like that? And does the economics come into it? 600 million euros.
I think we could spend 600 million in better ways than offering free transport. I think Marion touched on it there. I just question the whole feasibility of doing it. I think I would be more interested in providing more buses to connect more towns together.
Yeah.
And this would apply particularly in the country where we don't have and we've long distances for people to travel. I look at what happened with the school transport earlier this year. When it was made free, it was overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I think I'm more in favour of spending money in a targeted way. And I think when we changed the school transport system and offered it, and an awful lot of people that ordinarily can well afford to take their children and have managed for donkey's years because it was free, wanted it. I would much prefer to say, let's provide more, a bigger service to give us better connectivity for people. I suppose more services targeted towards people who want to get into work early in the morning and get home immediately after it. I think it's anything that's free tends to be abused in by a certain element of people.
Yeah.
Whilst the principle is something that we should work towards because of the carbon issue, I think it's something that we should look at the infrastructure first of all and then work back from there.
Okay.
I think it's a long-term project.
Right, but if it happened, I mean, are you of the opinion that buses and trains would there be too many people on them, or would there be buses running around areas half empty, do you think?
Well, you can see the services on the trains, take it from here to Dublin. At peak times, they are absolutely packed. Now, that's with people paying quite significant sums of money to go up on the train. Now, can you imagine what would happen if it was free? The infrastructure just isn't there. So I think maybe we're getting the cart before the horse in this case. I would say let's increase the infrastructure, and then as we increase the infrastructure, maybe start by reducing fares on a progressive way, say a 20% off, then we go to another 20%, and over a period of time, as we build up the infrastructure to accommodate it. But otherwise, I don't think it would work.
Okay, Sean's been on to say, I'd like to remind Marion Harkin, there's no such thing as free in anything. The working class taxpayers are paying for it. We all know that the working poor are now at the pin of their collar at this point with the ever-increasing cost of living. We'll come to cost of living in a moment. But
the point I'd make there, Niall, and he's absolutely right, but those are the people who will use it. I mean, it's not as if you're paying for something for somebody else. And I heard what Jim said, and I agree, reducing fares in a progressive way.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we do it tomorrow or the day after. We can't. We don't either have the services in place or indeed the resources. But it's to move in that direction. And he said that anything that's free is abused. But I think in the context of public transport, I think that's just a different system. And you're absolutely right about the school transport system. It was overwhelmed, and you said lots of people who can afford to drive their children to school, and you are right, but the idea is that nobody should be driving their children to school, that we should have school transport for everybody, and that's the situation. And we're talking about moving to net carbon zero. There are very few parents out there today who would say, if there was proper school transport, I would prefer to drive my child to school. They don't want to do it. It's much better that we have public transport. So we can't have it tomorrow, and we perhaps can't have it the day after. But as a policy proposal, there wasn't one TD in All Ireland because the government did not oppose it. So nobody voted against this. As a policy proposal and a way to go, I think it's visionary. I think it is something we should aim towards. And everyone can use it, including the hard-pressed taxpayers who are paying for it. It's for people to get to work and to do their business. And it's not just pie in the sky. Other countries have managed it. And I think in a proper progressive way, it's something we could aim for.
Yeah, and this person says, the problem we're going to have is the same as Jim says in relation to school transport. We have no room on our bus. My son was left on his own last week as he went to school from Kinloch to Bundoran at 8:20 in the morning. And again yesterday, we had to make alternative arrangements to get him to school. And that touches on what Jim said a moment ago.
I am working with many families who are in similar type positions. And that's because the system that we have in place doesn't work properly. But it doesn't mean that we don't say that a better system would be the provision of free public transport. I mean, the government themselves have decided that school transport will be free. But they didn't push the infrastructure in place to deal with it this year. And of course, people are tearing their hair out. I have many families, particularly families whose children had concessionary tickets, and now they have no means of getting to school. And it's absolutely dreadful. But I think in the context of the bigger picture and where we want to go and where we want to be, that we shouldn't say that a current issue about a system that doesn't work properly because the government did not put in place the structures that were needed, the support that was needed to make the school transport scheme work, because that didn't happen, shouldn't blind us to the fact that free, accessible, and accessible is really important, public transport is something we should aim for.
All right, okay. I want to get on to the cost of living issue in a moment, but somebody else says they describe themselves as a concerned resident. Free public transport, a joke. They can't even provide the S3 bus that was promised long ago for the West Ward area of Sligo and the Mohra Boy area. Right, okay, let's go to the cost of living. Jim, you had, well, what are your views, first of all, on the once-off cost of living measures contained in the budget? Was it enough to ease people's worries and concerns over the winter? I know you had a specific proposal a couple of weeks ago on this programme.
I come from a point that no matter who you are, you'd say they never give us enough. It's a question of there was a finite amount of money to be dispersed around the country. And I think, on balance, notwithstanding that I'd probably have issues with some of the issues that were the points that were made by the minister on the day, I think on balance the budget was relatively fair. I think as we go forward, I would prefer to see more targeted investments, that the people who absolutely need it get it. And reducing the tax bands, obviously we all welcome it. But in regards to the overall cost of living, some of this is, and quite a bit of it, is outside of the government's control. And I think we have to, as people, ourselves take on board and try and manage ourselves, just the same as the government has to try and manage money. Within families, I think you can break it down to the micro level. And I think in families where you see there's a television in every room in the house, I think we're coming to a stage that people will have to say, well, we've won television in the sitting room and we'll all look at the television. And maybe that'll help families, because there has been this breaking away of people living separate lives within the one home. I think in relation to food and things like that, I think it behoves all of us to do our best, try and cut down waste. I mean, they say that Irish people waste about 7 tonnes of food a year. Now, I may be wrong on that actual figure, but we waste an awful lot of money. So I think people have to be more practical, plan what they're going to buy, maybe buy branded products, that kind of thing. Switch off lights. I listened on one programme, I think 2 nights ago, somebody said, maybe instead of having lights on when you're looking at the telly, put on 2 candles, and they said they found it was much more romantic. That says more about our age.
Are we at that stage, Jim, that people have to consider using candles for lighting, do you think?
I suppose that may have been said jokingly.
Yeah.
But I think it's the kind of thinking that we're going to if we're going to deal with this ourselves. The government can't solve all our personal problems. That's the bottom line, no matter how good any government is. But I do think that we have to take responsibility. You've heard me say this on many occasions.
Yeah.
We have to take responsibility ourselves and try to help the national cause by us all doing a little bit. And if everybody does a little bit, then we won't have blackouts and maybe we'll be able to afford more. With regards to the 3 different payments, it's probably not enough, but I probably would say I could afford to do without it. And maybe it comes back to what I said in the other issue. Yeah. I think we should target these things more at the people who absolutely need it.
Overall, I was listening to what you had to say post-budget. Do you think, Marion Harkin, that Ministers McGrath and Donoghue done enough to address the concerns and difficulties people have?
Well, look, as Jim said, it's never enough. But in the context of the money they spent, how did they allocate it? And that's what it always comes down to. I mean, one of the things I've said budget after budget is that sometimes people have this sense that government ministers put their hands in their own pockets, take out the money and say, here, we've decided to give you this. This is our money. This is the taxpayers, the hard-pressed taxpayers you were talking about earlier. And it's not just those who pay income tax. Everybody pays tax, whether it's VAT, whatever it is. So we pay that tax to whoever is in government, whoever is in power, and it's up to them to decide how it's spent. Now, because we now have the ESRI and very many other organisations assessing the budget, looking at it in its entirety, we can see now that overall, with the once-off payments, that those who are perhaps on lower incomes are better off as long as the one-off payments would continue. But if they were to finish, and they will, because by their very definition, one-off literally means that, that those who sort of are on middle incomes will do very marginally better. And it is important to say, Niall, that international stats and figures would show that our tax system here is quite progressive. But going back to what that means, actually, is that those who earn more pay more. Yeah. But just going back to the budget itself, I think the electricity credits, I would support that view. But I've only one quibble. I think they should have paid two of them before Christmas, because most people have, for the last two electricity, if not three electricity bills, paid significantly more. And Jim is able to afford it, and so am I. But for somebody who's on a fixed income, and I come back to this time and time again, a fixed income and low income, a bill, an electricity bill, that's 50, 100, 150 euro more, strikes terror into their hearts, because they say, I don't have the money to pay it. And yes, we know people won't be cut off. We know all of that. But I would honestly think that if two of those credits, not just 200 was paid before Christmas, but if 400 was paid, that would take a bit of the pressure off. And the government have said that after Christmas, they are willing to look at the situation again. And they probably will have to. But can I make just two very quick comments, Niall? And these are very specific. There were two areas where I felt they just didn't go far enough. One of them was carers' allowance. That should be a qualifying payment for fuel allowance. Fuel allowance is not just determined by how much you earn. You have to be getting a certain, what they call, qualifying payment. Yep. Job seekers, disability, whatever. Carers' allowance should be one of those qualifying payments. Because when you care for anybody, young, old, regardless of the level of disability, you use so much more heat in your home, you use so much more energy, and costs just go through the roof. So that's the first one. And secondly, and this is a very specific case, but those who are on CE schemes, RSS, which is Rural Social Schemes, and TWO schemes, they got an increase of 5 euro. Yeah. All social welfare payments went up by 12. And as a colleague of mine, Michael Fitzmaurice, and myself, we spoke about this in the Dáil together. And one of the points he made was that those who were on job seekers looking for work got a much larger increase than those who are on a TUS or a CE scheme. And people are expected to travel to work, to go to work for job seekers, plus a small top up, and that was increased by 5%. People can't even afford to do it. It's a small point, but to those who are on those schemes, that's a massive difference.
Yeah. No need to increase the tax bans at all. Give us back our USC tax. Abolish it completely, says this person. Someone else wondering if smart meters are going to actually put up electricity, energy costs even more. someone else says a reduction in VAT would have been the most progressive way to ease the burden on the average working people. A lump sum is not the answer. I don't agree with Jim Lawler's views, but I agree 110% with him on the electricity allowance and other allowances. Should only be paid to people who need them, not to people who don't. Right, keep your texts and comments coming. I'll come to the codeine painkiller issue in a moment because it featured on Prime Time during the week. But can I ask you, Jim, have you any views on the young Irish soldier who lost his life in the Ukraine? He was with the Independent Legion, as I recall. Rory Mason from Dunboyne in County Meath is his name, only in his mid-20s. Yeah. Very tragic and sad for his family.
The first thing I'd say is I'd love to express my sympathy to the family. It's a sad loss when you lose anybody, but to lose a young man in circumstances like that. We don't know the exact circumstances of his death, but to die away on a battlefield is probably one of the worst things that can happen to a family. As a general rule, I probably would question whether Irish people should be actually going out to fight in the war.
Yeah,
I'm
coming to that. And Micheál Martin has said that while expressing sympathy with the family. We would advise people not to go to the Ukraine, says the Taoiseach. We'll continue with that advice. I believe people who are not in any shape or form trained in the military way or with military experience, in my view, should not get involved in the war.
I'd agree with that. Having said all that, I think we should continue to do all we can as a neutral nation at the moment. Maybe that's in inverted commas, that we should do all we can to support the Ukrainian government in this grab by Russia. I think we could do small things. I personally would send all, I believe there's 32 people working in the Russian embassy in Dublin. Mm. I'd send all bar three of them home, and I'd reduce our own in Russia to three. One wonders what these people are doing and why there's a need for 32 people in a small country like this. It's a big delegation, very big delegation, and one has to wonder what they're doing here. I think it's a simple way. I would probably subscribe to the fact that we shouldn't send back the ambassador, because that's a mechanism for, as long as he's there, you can convey messages through them. But all of the other people, I dumped them out of the country straight away.
Well, presumably there are many Russian citizens living in Ireland. They're representative of them, apart from anything else, are they?
Well, I'm not saying you cut them off altogether. I'm saying you keep three to look after the Russian people who... Mm. Many, as far as we can see, it's very difficult to know, but quite a lot of them supported the Ukrainians. Russian people supported the Ukrainians when they protested in O'Connell Street there a while ago.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of these things are symbolic, because we're a small nation, we can't do an awful lot. But we can do things that, I suppose, internationally can be seen as a little bit more than tokenism. I mean, talking about the ambassador and their attitude, we can quite simply, I'm pretty sure it's 32 people I've seen working there, and I just question what they're all wanted for. So
okay.
you're not cutting them off, the people that are already here. You just say, we're cutting you down, and that's it.
Well, I suppose the killing of the young Irishman just reminds us of the dire situation. I mean, it's off the front pages on many occasions, as we know, but that brings home again just what exactly is happening.
It's shocking what's going on out there. But wars are dreadful things when they happen. We're seeing them all over. Look at what's happened in Syria. You see cities being wiped out, families being wiped out, children being left without parents. We've all of these things, and we're having a crisis of refugees because of these wars.
Yeah.
And these are very unfortunate people. And I've listened to some people saying we shouldn't take any more in. We've got our own to look after. Relatively speaking, we are a wealthy nation. And I don't think we should resign from this undertaking to support the Ukrainians.
Okay. Marion, I suppose the first thing to say is obviously sympathies are with that young man's family. What did you make of that very sad story?
You can't even begin to think how his family are feeling. And I too want to pass on my most sincere sympathy. The death of anybody is tragic, but the death of a young person, and especially in those circumstances, is particularly difficult. I agree with Micheál Martin in the sense that, and I suppose young people have that idealism that to some extent maybe has been knocked out of me and Jim. I won't say anything about you now.
I don't know if I ever had it, to be honest.
But the sense of injustice and that you want to make a difference, not just in your own life, but in the world you live in. And the truth is, you know, most people feel that at some level. And I'm not assigning, you know, motives to this young man, but I can only presume that there was something like that in it. But going back to what's happening in Ukraine, the impact is global. And we have no control over what Vladimir Putin decided to do. The only control we have is over how we react. But that's, we spoke earlier about the cost of living.
Yeah.
That's hitting people in their pockets. And people sometimes look and say, look, you know, we can only take so much. But I think we have to stand fast with this one. As I quoted somebody there recently who said that if Russia win, if Ukraine win, it will change Russia, but there'll be a different Russia. But if Russia win or get what they want, there'll be a different Europe, not just Ukraine. And that's unfortunately where we find ourselves. And we look back and we think, you know, what are the similarities maybe to some of the other wars that we saw on the continent of Europe? And we all like to think we're insulated. It won't happen in our time. How could it? You know, look how far we have progressed. Look at our technologies. Look at how clever we think we've become. But we see that actually we have no control over any of this. And, you know, I agree with Jim. We are a small, neutral nation. Symbolism does matter.
Yeah.
And I think what we can do at the moment is to give our support to those who are here as best we can, those who are fleeing that war and that terror, and to give support as well to Ukraine for, let's say, medical supplies and however we can support them. But I suppose it's shocking. I mean, if I came into the studio or Jim came in 18 months ago in Ireland and said to you, there'll be a war in Europe.
Yeah.
The next time we come in here, and it will impact every single person listening to this programme. People would have said, you know.
Yeah, you're right, because it was interesting. Apparently, that featured very much so in the census. You remember the part of the census where you were asked, it was a blank sheet, you were just asked your observations about your life and what was going on. And apparently, the war. And what happened so suddenly, seemingly without warning, featured large in that. So it really did affect people and continues to affect people. Don't poke the bear, both of your advice. We should not be poking the bear. Remember how much we export to Russia. We have to keep that into account as well. How do you respond to that?
I have to. Sorry, I'll let you go first, Jim.
I think it's relative to the amount of exports we have, it's relatively small.
Mm.
God of Almighty, it's not just about exports.
No,
I mean,
it's not.
The world will be changed if somebody who has a nuclear arsenal, if somebody decides that they're going to change Europe. And I suppose because I spent 15 years over and back to Brussels. I didn't spend it in Brussels. It was over and back every week. But I met people from countries like Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, who are on the border at Finland. And I just got a different perspective, one I never had before, because they had lived under Russian domination. They had fought many wars over many years trying to ensure their independence. And I mean, as a small country who spent a long time trying to gain its independence, we have to understand that, and we have to know what it's like to have a very powerful neighbour. And that's what many of those countries feel. And I understand don't poke the bear. And if the bear was staying in its own territory and That was the case. But it's not. That bear is marauding. That bear is using its claws and its power to kill, to maim, to shatter lives, to demolish cities. And if you say, we'll let that bear maraud and we'll stay, and we can't even stay in our comfortable homes because we don't even have them now with the issue of the cost of energy and heat and all of that. Okay. If we say, that's okay, because God knows it's far enough away from us and we'll be okay. But everything comes to your door.
There's one thing that we shouldn't forget. We've seen what happened with the Nord Stream and what has happened to the gas line that was 80 feet down underwater. And people should not forget that all of the connections and all your broadband and all the connections between Ireland and the American continent go off the south coast of Ireland. And we've had the Russians already out there. One can assume they were mapping where these things are.
Yeah.
We've no protection to something like that. Okay. Absolutely
we'll
no.
Have to get
because we're such a small nation.
We'll have to get our fishermen out again,
so we
Jim.
We may be drawn into this, whether we like it or not.
And what about cyber attacks? Have we forgotten about what happened to the HSE?
Yeah.
How many of your listeners, Niall, just for that very reason, have they're waiting
still
this
impacted,
or longer?
Yeah.
You know, how long did it take the HSE to manage that, to get up and running again? And
systems are still being affected, apparently. That's what we're being told.
Yes, they're still affected. Where did that come from and why?
Yeah. Okay. On the school transport issue, this person says, over 40 years ago, a school bus was running from Cartran to Ballytiffnan to the Mercy and St John's and brought them home. If it was available 40 years ago, how then are children standing on the streets waiting in modern times? And somebody else says, when I was going to post-primary school in the 70s, the students who lived in the country got a free bus into town and also got the CIE bus for free. But we, because we lived in the town, had to pay for the bus to school. We walked or cycled on good days, but when the weather was bad, we took the bus. I always thought that was unfair that we had to pay.
Well, they're not wrong. You can't have something free for some people and not for others.
I think the real problem that we have in the country is a lack of planning at government. And I'm not saying this government, I'm saying all governments. We have known that our population has been growing inexorably.
Yeah.
And if we look at the profile of the age groups, I cannot, at the moment, there's roughly 55,000 to 70,000, depending on what's happening, births, and we're only having about 28,000 to 30,000 deaths a year. So the population is inexorably growing, plus the immigration issue. We've got people emigrating and then immigrants coming in, and the balance is slightly in favour of the people coming in.
Okay.
So most of that could be planned for. And unfortunately, if we've got a surplus of, say, 35,000 births, to me, it's logical. You should be able to say, in 4 years' time, we're going to need so much school capacity, all these different things. We should be able to plan, just from the planning applications, what's coming down the line in relation to the requirements for transport, for housing, for water. I mean, if you listened yesterday to the comments that Irish Water, particularly in the southern part of the country, some of the big towns, their water's not up to standard. Boiled water notices would be more frequent, and some of them would be waiting 14 years before they're upgraded by Irish Water. Yeah. All this comes back to a lack of planning.
Okay. Disgraceful Russophobia on your show this morning, says someone. And someone else says, Russia has been mapping Ireland since 1947 and it has ground plans for a land invasion. Clearly, the ports it will use include Killybegs, Castletown Bear, Belfast and the Shannon Estuary.
Well, so there's some the person who's talking
there's
about
somebody in the know.
Will be out there to defend us.
Right, I want to bring up the issue which we spoke about yesterday. We were talking with Karina Newell from Sligo in relation to the very sad death of her young sister Laura in January, and she'd been addicted to painkillers for many years, and they believed there was a direct connection between that situation and her death. And Karina featured on a programme on prime time on Tuesday night in relation to codeine, the availability of codeine over the counter. And she mentioned you, Marion Harkin, and you raised this in the Dáil. shortly after Laura's death.
I did, because I was asked to. I mean, I taught Corina many years ago in Sligo in the Mersey, and she contacted me a little while after her late sister Laura died. And we all know the story and the heartbreak and the sadness. And I think there's a number of issues here, Niall. And first of all, and I heard you speak about it this morning earlier, about pain. And in Laura's case, it was undiagnosed endometriosis. And for those who suffer from it, it is the most shocking pain, awful pain. But almost worse than that is the fact that it's often undiagnosed.
Yeah, yeah.
That for whatever reason, and I think, and I'm not playing the feminist card here, I think it is absolutely partly to do with the fact that it's a woman's issue. Absolutely. And I don't say that lightly.
Yeah.
And so whether it's undiagnosed endometriosis that somebody has to manage themselves, but it's also important to remember that there are many conditions where people have ongoing chronic pain. People tend to think of, you have a pain, it's a symptom of something else that's wrong with you.
Yeah.
But sometimes pain is a disease in its own right. And in fact, and I've probably said this before on this programme, the WHO, the World Health Organization, recognised pain as a disease in its own right about 5 years ago. I was very involved with that. I chaired a group in the European Parliament on that issue. I worked with Chronic Pain Ireland for very many years, because there are many people listening to your programme this morning who either themselves or family members will suffer from one kind of chronic pain or another. So it's not, if somebody says to you they have a bad back or they broke their leg or something like that, it's visible. If somebody talks about pain, the first question is, what's causing it?
Yeah.
And it's just, that's a huge issue for many people. But to get to the case in question.
Yeah, and the campaign they
and
have.
And the campaign that they have in place. Look, when I raised this initially, I received a number of emails, mainly from healthcare professionals, who said, look, this is something that we need to face up to. But I also received a lot of emails, Niall, from people who said, I can't afford to go to the doctor to get a prescription for, I won't use any trade names, but we all know what we're talking about here. I can't afford to do that. Not only can I not afford it, I haven't the time. I'll have to wait several days for the doctor to see me. You know, I can manage my own pain. So nothing is simple in life, and especially when it comes to health or pain.
Yeah, okay.
But there are guidelines in place, and those guidelines need to be adhered to in the spirit in which they were written. Finally, more and more countries are moving to removing codeine from over-the-counter medicines. I'm not saying we should do that, but I'm saying the time has come when we need to look at this to see what is the best way to approach it. But if we just say that we don't sell it or that people can't access it, that is not a solution, because there are many people out there today, as I said, listening to this programme, who will say, what am I going to do to manage my pain, which is real?
Yeah.
Pain is a disease.
It was a real eye-opener to me, I can tell you, since we raised it yesterday, just how many families are suffering along the lines of what Laura Newell was suffering as well. Jim, any thoughts on that, any views on that issue?
Well, Marion mentioned endometriosis. I know a person, a very good friend, who suffers with it. And they have a very senior position in a company. And I'd have to say their career and their family life has been destroyed by it. But the big problem appears to be that it's a very difficult condition to diagnose.
Yeah.
And there's a problem then getting into hospitals, getting the test done, because seemingly it's a prolonged procedure, a series of procedures to get to the diagnosis.
Yeah.
But to get to the main point of the abuse of these medications. I had about 3 weeks ago, I had a touch of flu, and I went in and I asked, and I was asked very definitely all the different, I on medications for this, that, and the other. So there's no doubt that some chemists are very effective.
A lot of them
are. The great majority are. But you'll always get a rogue one. But then there's the other side of the coin, that on the black market, it appears that there's a lot of these available, and some of those that are pushing other drugs have found that this can be every bit as lucrative, because people that are in bad pain all the time will do anything to try and ease it. But I suppose our medical, our health service, it's the delays in getting into it, and then it's the delays associated with some of the conditions that are very... I suffer with arthritis. It's a terribly painful... I've burnt it out, but it's a terribly painful condition. And I can understand people, I suppose, collapsing under the pressure of the continuous pain. They can't sleep, they can't eat, you know.
And they're taking on so much
medication, it upsets their tummies.
And we're still getting texts in relation to that. Right, we're completely out of time, but I want to ask you, Marion Harkin, before we finish, about Shesh Mountain. What is the situation there?
I brought it up in the Dáil very late on Wednesday night with Minister McConlogh, I think around 11:45 p.m. And because Minister McConlogh actually came to the chamber to answer my question, I thought, finally, after 27 months, we're going to get a definite answer on a compensation scheme. And while the minister keeps saying, and I believe it will happen, that there will be a compensation scheme in place, those farmers, those landowners are still waiting. Now, I'm not pretending that the government have done nothing. They've done a lot of good work, as have Leitrim County Council, and farmers there have managed to get their cap payments. But a compensation package is long overdue. It should have been in place by now. I keep asking about it. It will come, but it's far too late. And I was, as I said to the minister, perhaps I was naive. I really thought that we'd finally get it. And I asked him, is there any possibility we can get it before Christmas? You know, this happened 27 months ago. Will we have it before 2023? I'm hopeful, but look, we're still waiting. And the patience that those landowners and farmers have shown, as I said more than once, perhaps if they were out protesting, if they were closing roads, if they were making their case up at the Department of Agriculture, maybe this might have happened beforehand. But the minister has promised, he said he will, and we're waiting.